888-803-4438. Order today and save $14 by calling 1-888-803-4438.
Listening to GCN.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Dennis Cuddy, who's taught at the university level, worked in the Reagan administration and the Department of Education, has testified before Congress, has written some of the finest material we have, documenting the fact that there really are forces working behind the scenes intent upon the destruction of freedom throughout the world. And with that as a background, well, I think we're going to be talking about manipulation. What is the topic of today's program, Dennis? Management Plan Part 2, and you'll find that up at newswithviews.com. So you pick up the story there, Dennis.
Well, as usual, I begin each one of these articles, most of the time, with a note about some sort of contemporary event. And so I'd like to pick up the point of today, what just happened a few minutes ago. Times for the...
Dennis, we seem to be cutting in and out. Are you on a regular landline?
That's right.
All right, well, go right ahead.
Well, it's a matter that was timed for the news cycle tonight. On the East Coast, the nightly news, ABC, NBC, CBS cable.
Dennis, I'm going to have to ask you to hang up and have my producer call you back again. Just see if we can get that worked out. So if you'll hang up, my producer will call you right back, and we'll get Dr. Cuddy back on the line here and see if we can get away from that sort of drive us crazy before very long. And sometimes this seems to happen, especially when I'm talking to very important people. But anyway, Dr. Dennis Cuddy is our guest this afternoon, and certainly one of my favorite guests here at Radio Liberty. And Dennis, of course, is going to be talking, I'm sure, about the Democratic Convention. Oh, my goodness, this is real showbiz. As if they've really made a bit of difference what happens at the Democrat or the Republican convention. As if it really made a bit of difference how the American people feel about how they should be ruled or what should happen in the world. Dennis, let's see if that's any better. Okay, go ahead.
Well, am I coming through any better?
You're coming through. So far, so good. Let's see.
Time for the nightly news cycle. We just had the Democratic Convention nominate, by acclamation, Barack Obama. Now, the way I'm bringing this up is how things are managed. Originally, you had Barack Obama winning a very difficult contest against Senator Clinton. Then all of the Clinton delegates said, well, we didn't go through this for nothing. We should be recognized at the convention. So supposedly some deal was worked out whereby Senator Clinton's name would be put into nomination and there be votes state by state as usual. Of course, that would result in something very, very close, which the Obama people didn't like. But the point was Hillary Clinton was telling her supporters, you know, we got 18 million roughly popular votes. And you should have your day, and sure, he's going to win. That's the way it works out. But you should be able to record your vote in the difficult time that you went through in a long campaign season. So all of our supporters come to the convention very enthusiastic that they would be recognized and so on. Well, as it turns out, if you watch the news, even though the nightly media is saying how this is just a wonderful, peachy show of unity. From my perspective, it was pretty well a disaster in the sense of...
Hold that thought for just a moment. We'll be back here in just a moment with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Have you made preparations to look after yourself and your family in case there's a national emergency or a terrorist attack? Well, I want to tell you that the government's looking after their people. In fact, plans have been made to protect people of high-ranking position in government, but they're not making any preparations for the average individual, so you're going to have to look after yourself. If you'd like information on long-term food storage, if you'd like information on the other items you would need in case of a national emergency, why don't you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 and ask for the emergency food catalog. We'll get it right off to you and we'll get the items shipped directly from Ready Reserve Foods. That's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You're going to have to begin making preparations to look after yourself.
This is George Whitehurst Berry, your host for CRASH. Are you ready?
I, Dr. Leonard Horowitz, I do hereby indict you, Dr. Peter Duesberg, for the deaths of millions of people worldwide through your role in the creation of AIDS.
Dr. Peter Duesberg, are you a mass murderer?
I'm afraid I'm not quite that powerful. I think Dr. Horowitz must have seen Dr. Strangelove once too many times. The retroviruses are the most harmless viruses that we know.
This is George Whitehurst Berry, your host for CRASH, Are You Ready? CRASH, Are You Ready? Is the most controversial program on the Genesis Communications Network. Find out why. Visit our website at www.hearitonline.com. That's HEARITONLINE.com.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Cuddy is simply pointing out how they manage all these conventions. It really doesn't matter. They've already decided who's going to be elected president, and of course they decided who are going to be the two nominees. It is decided by the people who control the media, who control the reality of the public. But here we get to this Democratic convention, supposedly a beautiful example of how our system really works. And of course, the way the rules were, why, of course, every state was to be polled, the delegates were to vote for the person that they wanted, and then after they were pledged on the first vote to vote for whoever the public wanted, and then on the second vote or the third vote, they could switch to and vote for Obama if they wanted to. But of course, that's not how it really works, because they never play by the rules. If it looks like it's going to be an embarrassment or the other candidate's going to win, they saw that in Nevada where, because Ron Paul was going to take most of the delegates, so they simply suspended the convention. That's democracy. That's how democracy really works. They suspended the meeting, suspended the convention, and then in private they nominated the people to go to the Republican convention next week. So there would no dissension at all. And they do not want representative government. It is all cooked up in the smoke-filled rooms behind the scenes. And so tell us what happened then. You were just saying that one group was referring to another. What happened?
Well, it's not just a case of the convention is managed, but it shows how little respect the candidates, in this case Senator Clinton, and Obama have for their own people. if you're Hillary Clinton and you've, you know, persuaded all your people how wonderful and hard work they campaigned and they should be recognized, and you get them to say, okay, we'll get a, you know, and come all the way from the state of Maine or wherever to have their voice, and then you show up, and what happens is, right at the outset, Hillary makes this statement saying, well, I release my delegates. Now, she said, I'm not, there's a big boo, 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 boo. And then she says, now, I'm not telling you what to do. You know, you vote however you want, but I'm just saying I'm releasing you vote for whoever you want to. So what happened was the votes then piled up for Senator Obama.
Well, I think, didn't she say, I'm voting for Obama? That's...
Yeah, yeah. She says, yeah, she said, I have cast my, and it's for Obama. I've indicated that's who I'm going to vote for. So anyway, the votes, as they're going through this roll call, build up to like 1,400 or something to just 300 for her. Okay, so first thing, she's now getting, it's not Obama who's getting embarrassed by the closeness. Now, she's getting embarrassed because what happened to all these loyal candidates? I mean, you know, these are people who really fought hard for Hillary, and we're coming from the state of Maine and Florida because we want to show, you know, that we worked hard for Hillary, and as soon as they're given a chance, okay, forget Hillary. You know, we're going to go over and vote for Obama. It was never a question of who was going to be the ultimate nominee. So that's the first embarrassment, that now instead of him getting embarrassed, she gets embarrassed. The second thing that happened, though, when they went from New Mexico then to Illinois, who deferred to New York, and she gets up there and says, I move, you know, we accept it by acclamation. If I'm one of those people from a state, you know, after New Mexico, I'm saying, what voice? You know, I couldn't even say I am for the state of the, you know, woolly, you know, sheep or something like they always do. In other words, you've come all the way from your state thinking you're going to have a voice, and then she steps in after the state of New Mexico and says, okay, it's over, you know, dun, 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 unity. And then, if I'm a Clinton delegate from one of those states that, you know, is beyond alphabetically the state of New York, I'm saying, what in the world is going on? I mean, this is all a farce. This is all, quote, managed. I am meaningless. You know, I mean nothing not only to this party, I mean nothing to Senator Clinton herself, who I work for. It was, in my opinion, it was ridiculous.
Well, I'm sure it is. I think it's just another example of how the democratic process works. The democracy doesn't work because somebody's always pulling the strings behind the scenes. I saw this in organized medicine when I was in the House of Delegates of the California Medical Association. Didn't matter how the doctors felt. Overwhelmingly, they would support one position, and the leaders would do just the opposite and call it democracy. So, you know, people have to understand that this is why our founding fathers gave us a republic, not a democracy, because they knew, of course, democracy always degenerates into despotism. In fact, Plato said that 2,350 years ago when he wrote his Republic. Democracy always degenerates into despotism. That's why they teach us in our schools that we're a democracy, why our politicians tell us we're a democracy, why the media insists we're a democracy, because that was the last thing the founders of this country wanted was democracy, because they knew it would run just this way. An elite would run everything, and the people would be expected to follow along happily, clapping their hands and cheering, of course, as we vote in the candidate of the elite's choice. Go ahead.
Sure. It was exactly as you were describing what Plato talked about, this elite with these masses who think they're governing themselves, but they're really controlled. In the case of the founders, they would say, well, no, we can't have a democracy because it will be a mobocracy, that the mob would rule, and therefore we really need this elite, the ones who know best. And they were also afraid of what they called the tyranny of the majority, as in, you know, next Tuesday, if you have an absolute democracy, it means what the majority wants. And so if next Tuesday the majority, through some sort of emotional fit, decides that, you know, people with blue eyes get executed, well, that's it, they get executed, you know, that sort of thing. So that's why they rejected the concept of democracy and had a constitutional republic instead. Of course, when you do that, as you say, you wind up with this elite, a la the French Revolution, the philosopher kings, and Plato's Republic, where this elite manages everything, and that's pretty much what we got, and not only in this country, but worldwide. So moving now to the the article I did, it's not just a case of Senator Clinton managing her own people like they're, you know, some sort of little pawns in a game, which I guess she considers them. But the same thing is true as I begin this with a note about the Obama campaign hypocrisy. And apparently he just can get away with these things. On Fox News Sunday, on August 17th, Obama National Campaign co-chair, this is Senator Claire McCaskill, said on Fox News Sunday regarding Senator McCain's very strong response to the Russian invasion of Georgia, which I might get to in a later discussion, in a later article, because that's another manipulation Zbigniew Brzezinski and the boys are up to. Regarding this, she said, oh my, you know, Senator McCain's strong response to that Russian invasion of Georgia, he shouldn't be intervening because, as she said, quote, we only have one commander-in-chief and one secretary of state at a time, end quote. Now there she is saying Senator McCain is wrong because we only have one commander-in-chief, that'd be George Bush, and one secretary of state, Condi, okay? Now think about that for a minute. Think about the hypocrisy of that statement by the Obama National Campaign co-chair. Ask yourself, has Senator Obama abided by that apparently, you know, quote, sacred principle? Or have you witnessed any statements by him criticizing the commander-in-chief on Iraq, perhaps Afghanistan, perhaps Iran?
In fact, he wants to send more troops to Afghanistan,
sure,
so they can get killed over there fighting a war that we're eventually going to lose. And the reason we're going to lose it is because we're financing the Pakistan military that's financing the Taliban. Of course we're going to lose. I mean, when you're financing the enemy, why, you don't stand a chance of winning. And we've been there for 6 years already. Our boys have been dying there all this time, going on 7 years. Obama wants to send more men to Afghanistan. Of course, I'm not saying that I don't like either candidate. I think both of them are controlled by the same people. But
sure,
until the American people understand that, it's all showbiz. You know, it's simply what they're doing is entertaining us, and they argue back and forth, and they talk about differences in philosophy, but in the end, they're all globalists, they're all dedicated to world government. Has either one of the candidates, either McCain or Obama, spoken out against globalism? No. Has either one of them said we've got to pull all of our troops out of Afghanistan? No, they're both in favor of keeping our troops in Afghanistan and fighting on and on and on. And in fact, I think the last person who ever defeated Afghanistan was Alexander the Great.
Right.
He died shortly thereafter, and we're not going to win over there, especially when we're financing the Pakistan military that's financing the Taliban that is killing our boys. So go right ahead.
And don't forget, we've brought more opium there, too. You know,
right.
That's another of our achievements over there. Opium has made a comeback. It just struck me the hypocrisy of this whole thing, because night after night after night you hear Obama or an Obama spokesman saying George Bush is wrong on Iraq and so forth. George Bush is wrong on Afghanistan. George Bush is wrong on Iran. George Bush is wrong on Pakistan and so forth. And you know, I've got to admit, I think he's wrong on all these things too. But it seems to me the height of hypocrisy to criticize the, quote, commander-in-chief on Iraq, the commander-in-chief on Afghanistan, the commander-in-chief on Iran, the commander-in-chief on Pakistan, and then when McCain has a disagreement with Bush on the Russian invasion of Georgia, all of a sudden, the Obama people become a big defender of George Bush, the commander-in-chief. It just struck me as ludicrous. And so anyway, that shows how these things are completely managed. This hypocrisy, I have not seen yet any of the national news media, Washington Post. If I say, wait a minute, you know, what's going on here? What is this sort of sacred commander-in-chief thou shalt not criticize routine?
I think it's all showbiz. I think if people have to understand, it's show business. It's symbolism over substance. It's rhetoric over reality. It's to create our reality and make us think that there's really a difference between the leaders of the two parties. And basically, it's all for our entertainment. It's all as a distraction. It's to give us the idea that there is a difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. One of our good friends, Joe Farrow, with WorldNet Daily, recently wrote a book called None of the Above. Meaning, of course, if I have to vote for McCain or Obama, why, of course, none of the above. And he's been accused of being a heretic because everybody knows that God's a Republican and McCain's a Republican. And not to vote for McCain means that you're voting against God. What sort of madness has gripped the American people today? And it's really rather frightening. We'll be back in just a moment here with our good friend, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, talking about management. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Go right ahead, Dennis.
Sure. Picking up on what you just said, that sort of process of who one should vote for, one of the key elements of the power elite managers is this principle of the lesser of two evils, where they put forward their own candidate A and then the elite's own candidate B. And you're supposed to say, and a lot of people do go out and say, well, I don't really like either one of them that much. However, so-and-so is the lesser of two evils, so I held my nose and I pulled the lever for that one. The point is, and what the power elite counts on, is that you will continue to do that. You will vote for the lesser of two evils in that terminology, and they understand that the American public has bought into that, not realizing that if they can count on you voting for the lesser of two evils each time, then that's all you're going to get, the lesser of two, quote, evils in political terms. And so they continue to play this as the American people, they believe, are a bunch of suckers, and the American people apparently are just continuing to go along with it. And so what I'm doing here in the management plan part two is, if your listeners remember part one, the last week when we were talking about it, I had gotten up to, from the beginning of this process, a couple of hundred years ago, up to the 1930s. And in the 30s, you had a couple of groups in this country, the National Planning Association, and in Britain, Political and Economic Planning, as it was called. And Charles Hitch, H-I-T-C-H, at that time became a Rhodes Scholar, 1932-33 in England. And your listeners who've heard me before say, whenever something is up, some management plan operation is in full swing, check out the Rhodes Scholar. There's usually one somewhere lurking around behind some of this stuff. And so in this case, Charles Hitch was a Rhodes Scholar in England when this was going on. And when he returned to the U.S., he became involved in what's called systems management. At the time, it was a brand new field. It's pretty well known about now. But at that time, it was something fairly new, and so he worked his way up to the 1960s to be comptroller of the U.S. Department of Defense, where he developed something called PPBS, Planning, Programming, Budgeting System. People like Robert McNamara just loved this sort of stuff. People became numbers to be managed, basically. And at the same time, he was in England. Peter Drucker moved from Frankfurt, Germany, where he had received his doctorate, to England, and he began working there for an insurance company, but then he moved to the U.S. and later became a professor of management at New York University in 1950. Now, the next year, a fellow named Armin Feigenbaum introduced the term total quality management. Your listeners will be familiar with that, this TQM concept, in a book he wrote called Quality Control. And then another famous name at the time was Edward Deming. And he would become perhaps the chief promoter of TQM, and he would also become known as the father of modern management. That's Drucker. And what he did basically was describe how humans are to be managed, not just in general, but specifically all across all sectors of society. Even including religious activities. So that included religion as well, and in terms of what's going on today, Drucker mentored early on church growth leader and CFR member Rick Warren.
Hold that. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dennis was giving us sort of the background of these concepts of management. One of the names he mentioned was Peter Drucker. Peter Drucker, of course, the father of the modern-day church growth movement, was a professor in Europe, came over to America, began pushing these concepts of management. How should corporations manage their population? How should government manage its employees? How should religious organizations manage their members? And, of course, the whole idea is control. It's all about control. How do you control the common people, the human resources, as it were? We are no longer simply human beings made in the image and likeness of God. We are beings who are here, and we have to be managed. We have to be controlled. We have to be numbered. We have to be regulated. We have to be trained to go along with their programs and to believe what they want us to believe and simply go along with their program, because these are the elite, these people who, of course, know what's best for us common people. So pick up the story there, Dennis.
Sure. Some years ago, decades ago, employment offices were dealing with people who they would call personnel. But that changed to human resources, because as people came to be known as entities to be managed, they were like other resources. You know, natural resources are to be managed. We must manage our natural resources as a nation. And so people became sort of a commodity in numbers, and that's why they fit in with this PPBBS concept in government and the military, you know, and body counts and things like that. And so in terms of religion, Rick Warren, the organizer of the leader of the purpose-driven churches around the world, was the only one who was able to get both Senators McCain and Obama to have a joint appearance. It occurred just a week or so ago at his Saddleback Church. And he questioned them on faith in the common good. You'll hear that term, common ground, common good, all these things that we have in common, you know, our common values, which immediately sort of excludes acceptance of Christ as Lord and Savior to be admitted to heaven, you know, because, I mean, the Hindus don't believe that, so that we don't have that, quote, in common. So what I asked, one of the questions I asked, which Rick Warren, of course, wouldn't ask because he wants to be really polite to Barack Obama, is if I've been sitting there, say, Senator Obama, why do you carry around this, among your good luck charms, Hanuman, he's called Lord Hanuman, the Hindu monkey god idol. I mean, why are you doing that? Especially, Senator Obama, since the first of the Ten Commandments is, quote, I am the Lord thy God, thou shalt have no other gods before me.
How does he carry that around? I didn't know he did. Does he carry it on his keychain or what?
Yeah, it's a chain. He's got several things on there. Now, what he'd probably say is, oh, well, you know, somebody gave this to me, and it's got, you know, a little good luck charm, a rabbit's foot, you know, whatever's on there. And that's, unfortunately, that's where his mind comes to a screeching halt. It's one thing to carry around some sort of secular entity, you know, a little silver four-leaf clover that your child has given. It's a whole other thing to carry around a pagan deity. That's a whole other ball game. This is something very specific. Now, you either believe that that's going to bring you good luck or might bring you good luck, or you don't. Now, if you don't believe it, why are you carrying it around in the first place? But the second point is, in the Bible, if you're going to claim to be a biblical Christian, God makes a really big point about having no other graven idols, you know, things like that. So the last thing, if you're a really dedicated Christian, that you should be doing is carrying around any pagan deity as some sort of good luck charm. In this case, Lord Hanuman, the monkey god idol. Now, I didn't put this in here, but I'm going to say it on the air, because this is what they were saying over in India. What you had was the Congress Party decided, when it found out that he was carrying this around as a good luck charm, they decided to give him a 2-foot-tall gold-plated replica of this monkey god idol. And the head of the party over there, Brijmohan Bama, and others said, these are the terms they used. They said, well, we're doing this because he is, Senator Obama is a, quote, devotee of Hanuman. And then they said he has, quote, deep faith in Hanuman. Now, I don't know whether he does or not, but these people are under the impression that he does for some reason. And, you know, you got to decide whether they're just making this up or somebody, you know, had a chat with Obama 4 months ago and he said, oh, yeah, I've got deep fake, or whatever. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But they're under the impression that he did for some reason.
Well, because he said he's a citizen of the world. How can you be a citizen of the world if you're dedicated to the United States? You can't be both. I mean, we may live in the world, but you're either dedicated to the sovereignty of the United States and maintaining our freedom under God, or, well, of course, maybe he believes in another God. We don't know what he believes. And certainly he keeps changing what he says so often. But then I certainly don't think that I'm for 1 minute is backing John McCain either, because, I mean, neither one of these men is worthy to be the president. John McCain comes from the Council on Foreign Relations. Obama picked Joe Biden, who was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and remains very, very close to them. We'll be back in just a moment here.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Are you as prepared physically and spiritually as you can be for the uncertainties of 2008-2009? This is Elizabeth Border. You can request a free sample newsletter tracking the police state, both the Protestant and Roman Catholic signs of the great falling away. Just write your request to Post Office Box 8, Bethlehem, Maryland 21609. You can hear our internet program on the Classy Genesis Communications Network, GCNlive.com, 6 p.m. Central, Monday through Friday. You can also hear it on shortwave Friday evenings on 5070, 7 p.m. Central. You can hear us on Saturday and Sunday evenings after Dr. Stan on Rick's satellite. Sometimes Sally Lou and Pat Hockett will slip out of American Babylon to satirize, entertain, and yes, teach you in parable form. If you love the Republic, that old, beautiful America, be sure to tune in to the Divided Kingdom.
Drink and Mate proudly presents another mind-boggling episode of America's toughest quiz show, That's Too Complicated. Let's see if we can figure out which contestant got the intellectual edge after an evening of partying by using Drink and Mate.
For 20 points in the win, Milt, GLUR5 and blank kinate receptor subunits in hippocampal neurons co-assemble to form functional receptors.
Pony?
Oh, too bad. Yes, Chip.
The logical companion of GLUR5, GLUR6.
You've won the game!
Hey, life is like a game, and if you want to win, you've got to give it your best every day, which doesn't always happen after an evening of celebrating with friends and family. That's why there's Drinkin' Mate, a patented formula of guava leaf extract proven to reduce the effects of hangover. It restores balance to your body, keeping headaches and nausea at bay, and it really works. Tell them, Don.
Drinkin' Mate. I wouldn't be able to read this without it.
Available at quality retailers nationwide. Drinkin' Mate urges you to please drink responsibly.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And Dr. Cuddy's been talking about this graven image of one of the Hindu gods that Obama carries. And, of course, for the Hindus, the government over there has made a 2-foot gold-plated statue of that god to present to Obama because, well, in terms of recognition, the fact that he recognized the importance of this god. Now, of course, Dennis's point is, if you are really a born-again Christian, why we're told you should have no other gods before me. And he's carrying around a replica of another god. And of course, the second commandment is, thou shalt have no graven images. And he's carrying a graven image of another god. Maybe he just doesn't understand. Maybe he doesn't understand the importance of the Ten Commandments. Or maybe he has a different worldview than the average American. After all, he said when he was there over there in Germany, I am a citizen of the world. You can look up his speech. I am a citizen of the world. Well, you can't be president of the United States and a citizen of the United States and a citizen of the world, too, because, of course, the whole idea is to do away with that sovereignty of our country and simply merge us into this new world order, this new world religion, with a new world leader. And that's really what this is all about. And I'm not saying that McCain is one bit different at all. I've seen pictures of him actually hugging the man who was primarily responsible for torturing all the other prisoners over there in Vietnam. Of course, McCain got very, very special, privileges when he was a Vietnamese prisoner, and many of the other prisoners hated him. They called him the Prince because he made propaganda broadcasts for the North Vietnamese and really betrayed his responsibility. But then, that's a long time ago, and now he's running for the presidency of the United States. But I think we have to look effectively, do we really have a choice between two men who would champion the American cause? And John McCain comes from the Council on Foreign Relations. That is a think tank dedicated to the destruction of the sovereignty of our country. It's a front for a secret society created back in 1891. If you want the documentation, Professor Quigley's wonderful book, Tragedy and Hope, that was suppressed for so many years, but we actually have the book available, and we even have an interview with Professor Quigley where he tells how his book was suppressed. John McCain is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Obama picked, Joe Biden, a former member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and very, very close to the CFR, and if you don't believe it, go up on the Internet and just Google in Joe Biden, Council on Foreign Relations, and you'll see, of course, where he's there talking to them recently and sharing with them his views on foreign policy. So, but Dr. Cuddy was just saying, do you really think that Obama makes the decisions on his own? Do you really think that it was just spontaneously that all the major media in America suddenly got behind John McCain when it was obvious they couldn't sell Mayor Giuliani to the American people? And a campaign that was bankrupt and was just about ready to fold suddenly regains life, and because all of the media were backing John McCain? Well, understand that none of this is real. It's all a mirage. But pick the story up there. It's symbolism over substance, rhetoric over reality.
That's right. And the person who received, accepted this 2-foot gold-plated hanuman was Carolyn Sauvage Marsh. She was head of Democrats Abroad for India. So, this is a sort of official representative there. And it was supposed to have arrived in the U.S. The day before the convention began, August 24, but try as you might, you won't see any news items about this. And it only arrived here after being, quote, sanctified, quote, through a very rigorous process by Hindu temple priests. So the point is the Indians, the people in India, the Congress Party in India, aren't just going through some little joke here. They're very serious. This is very important to them. And I doubt that Senator Obama is going to be, dissing them, as they say in their current language, after they've gone to this trouble. And in terms of the concept of Obama saying citizen of the world, as I've mentioned many times before, this is a cross-party. You had Rod Paige, former U.S. Secretary of Education under George Bush, saying the same thing. And he was saying, we're going to prepare our children to be, quote, citizens of the world. So this is the Obama, liberal Democrat, Bush Secretary of Education, yes, our children are going to be citizens of the world. And as I pointed out at that time, some months ago when I had that article about that, actually some years ago now, I said the concept of citizen is different from, I am a human being, I am a member of the human race, all that. Citizen has a legal context to it. If you're a citizen of the state of, let's say, California, that means you're not just living there, you're not just a resident. You have legal obligations to California if you're a citizen. So if you're a, quote, citizen of the world, that implies you have legal obligations to the world. Now the question, as Dr. Stan has alluded to, is what happens if they're in contravention of your legal obligations with the United States as a citizen of this country. Same thing with Obama's attitude, McCain's too, about, we need to make collective decisions with our allies and so forth. A collective decision is different from simply having discussions. A collective decision, which is probably what Obama has in mind, is that means the others have a veto In other words, you're going to say, well, I want to do this, but if you don't, then we will make a collective compromise decision. That is a fundamental question that should be asked to both McCain and Obama. You know, what is your policy? What will be your policy as president of the U.S.? Will you just talk to others, talk to your allies, but then make a decision whether to go to war or not go to war based on the national interest of the United States and what the people here want? Or are you going to be part of this, you know, greater group of individuals making these collective decisions, which may not necessarily be in our best interest? It may be in the interest of the other 5 or 7 or 20 or whatever members of this collective group you're consulting with, but it may not be in our interest. And so these are fundamental questions that the media chooses not to even get into. Back to the article, the Drucker-Warren, that's Rick Warren, Peter Drucker connection, is that Drucker said church congregations should be seen as resources. There's that term again, resources. And as I said, resources are to be managed. Each church and each member of the congregation then has what Warren calls a purpose. This is where he gets the idea of a purpose-driven church. For example, combating global poverty. And so this purpose then needs to be managed. You know, you just can't let people go out doing their own thing. You have to manage this, sort of the group orientation, right? Group is the key term in what socialists believe. You can check any of the socialist writings of the day. You go back to National Socialism, Hitler, you know, the Soviet Socialism. They say the same thing, this sort of thing. The group is what is important. John Dewey, when he went over to the Soviet Union in the 20s, he says you don't hear anything more than you hear the word group. You know, the group needs to, the group will do this, the group this, that, and the other. That's because the individual is unimportant. That's the distinction between them and us, where you have in the United States individual liberties, individual rights endowed by our Creator and so forth. The individual is important. But if you look at the convention, as I started this discussion, apparently the individual Clinton supporters aren't important. You know, they could just be, okay, you know, glad you came and toodaloo. You know, you don't even get to have a vote if your state happens to begin after the letter N. You know, Wyoming, tough luck. Oregon, too bad. You know, goodbye. South Carolina, who cares? You know, whatever it is. And so this shows how all of these individuals are supposed to be managed by these higher authorities, whether it's Obama or Clinton or the paralegal or whoever it is. And so to the extent that this is done, these people are managed, and the churches and their members, what you find is they spend more and more time acting as basically social service conduits and less time involved in traditional religious activities, you know, worship services, you know, my relation with my God, and here's, you know, I'm in the worship service and so forth. What you find is that more and more time is siphoned off into this, now let's see what we can do for the common good, for basically humanity. And if your listeners were listening last week, that's what I was stressing in part one of this. The shift was to humanity. And I'm not going to repeat all that, but August Comte had the new religion of positive polity, and humanity was supposed to be the alternative to God. I mentioned how Cecil Rhodes' right-hand man, W.T. Stead, was calling it the civic church. And how, you know, these distinctions of Catholics and Protestants and deists, whatever, that didn't matter, you know. It was this common humanity that we were now serving. So, on May 22nd of this year, I mentioned in the article, Rick Warren announced the beginning of his peace plan. This you know, P-E-A-C-E with periods. It stands for something. It's a coalition. It involves businesses. It's a global alliance of churches, businesses, and so on, addressing these problems, poverty, disease, so forth around the world. And he's also working with Tony Blair, former Prime Minister of Britain, who has a faith foundation. Now, according to the Christian Post, just a few months ago, Blair said, quote, in an era of globalization, there is nothing, get that, you know, nothing more important than getting people of different faiths and cultures to understand each other better and live in peace and mutual respect, end quote. Now, I've mentioned in the past my problem with that word respect. Everybody has the right to whatever religious beliefs they want. They also should not be persecuted. But too often we hear that mutual respect of the religious faiths themselves. And Christians I know for sure, are not supposed to respect any false religions. Those who claim, you know, that theirs is the way, you know, Laoism, and Taoism, or with Lao Tse and so forth, we're not supposed to respect those faiths because they are false religions, and that there is only one way to salvation, and that is Christ. Blair's office also has said he has argued that faith has to be rescued from those who would divide. Well, to me, the problem with that is it's what what makes us different as religious believers in Christ, not what we have in common, end quote. let me get a sip of water here.
All right, fine, and Chris, I think this is so important. There are those people who say, well, we should love everybody. Yes, there's nothing wrong with loving everybody. There's nothing wrong with the Chinese people. They're wonderful people, but they live under a totalitarian regime, and because they're nice people and they live under a totalitarian regime, should we embrace the totalitarian regime? Because they're nice people and they embrace a different religion, at least those, the majority of them are Buddhist or Taoist, and you know, should we embrace that because they're nice people? What we really want to do, of course, is bring them into an understanding of the truth of the Christian faith, if we believe in the Christian faith. But, of course, there's so many people who say, well, I don't want to try to impose my ideas on others, and I don't think you can impose them, but at least you have an opportunity. I think you have not only an opportunity, but an obligation to introduce these other thoughts. Because, of course, if they do not become Christians, then, of course, eternity is a long way. And, of course, people have to understand that there's only one way to God, and that is through Jesus Christ. If you are a Christian, if you're not a Christian, you would not embrace that philosophy. You'd think it was heretical. I don't. I'm a Christian. I believe that I have an obligation to try to bring people into a personal relationship with our Lord. Go right ahead, Dennis.
Sure. That's basically it in a nutshell, what you just said. You respect the right of a person to have whatever faith they want, but that does not translate into respect of the faith themselves. But the way Blair is saying it, we have to have respect for their faiths. That would mean, and he said you have to be rescued from them. This would mean if you're a Christian who believes in salvation through Christ alone, those of other faiths have to be, quote, rescued from you. And that's certainly not the view of Christians that I know. So the ultimate goal of the Paralete is this one-world religion, which accommodates the views of those of Eastern faiths and Western faiths. And if you look at Rick Warren's Purpose-Driven Life, published a few years ago, what he emphasizes is community. And he also says that we are more connected, that connected sense, than we realize. And he also says the Holy Bible, referring to the New Century Version, indicates that God, quote, is everywhere and is, quote, in everything, end quote.
That's the old pantheistic belief, isn't it, Dennis?
Well, it's a pantheistic and monistic and several and New Age and so forth. So traditional Christians and Jews believe that God is omnipresent, that's everywhere, but we don't believe that he is in, quote, in everything, like in rocks, as distinguished from being everywhere. There's a distinction. And it also says, or in you all. That is what the Bible talks about when it has Ephesians 4, verse 6 is where he's getting this from in his version. But if you look in there, it's very clear there's a distinction. It just says, in you all. It doesn't say in everything. It says in you all, meaning, you know, the Holy Spirit within us and so forth, if we accept Christ and invite him into us and the Holy Spirit abides and so forth and so on. But that's totally different from saying in everything. That's what the word you means. Now, I'm quoting somebody here who has a book out. It's Pastor Larry DeBrine, and he's author of Church. This particular volume that he has out recently is Church on the Rise, Why I am not a Purpose-Driven Pastor, just last year. The way he puts it is that this concept of, quote, in everything attribute, when it's applied to God, is more of an Eastern QI, it's pronounced chi, the chi concept, where God is defined as some sort of spiritual energy flow. That's what God is. Now, traditional Christians and Jews believe God created energy and everything else, but God is not its equivalent. God is not the energy flow itself. The chi concept, which you could call also the immanence, I-M-M-A-N-E-N-C-E, the immanence concept, is more in line with what we know today as the New Age beliefs. And in that case, another author, Mac Dominic, has a book called Rebuilding the Tower of Babel, The Dark Side of the Purpose-Driven New Paradigm Church. And he points out that New Ager, and she also happens to be a witch, Starhawk, on page 10 or 22, depending upon the version, it first came out in 1979, her book, Spiral Dance, she just happens to emphasize the same three things. She emphasizes community there, she emphasizes interconnectedness there, and she emphasizes immanence, all on that page, either page 10 or 22, just depending on the edition.
And I think it's so important people understand that these influences have spread into the Christian church. And I'm sure
right.
many good people have picked these things up unknowingly because they do not understand the true nature of the spiritual battle in which we're engaged today. And many, many good ministers have adopted these things only to find out later to the regret that, of course, they've led their parishioners away from an understanding and a personal relationship with our Lord into these occultic beliefs, which, of course, will transform their lives and may very well transform their view of eternity. Go right ahead, Dennis.
Right, and that's how it happens. What you do is they act in good faith. You don't come to them and say, okay, now become Hindus. What you do is this transitional stage where you shifted away from traditional Christian Judeo-Christian beliefs towards this concept of a civic church and helping humanity. And then what you do is you bring the Hindus the other way, and that's where you get the synthesis.
And of course,
that's
then
the Taoist goal.
And then we'll have our meditation, we'll have our yoga, we'll have our concentration.
Right.
We will try to bring these other spirits into our lives. We'll be right back in just a moment with Dr. Cuddy to wrap up today's program. Dennis, you got 3 minutes there.
Okay, well, proceeding then, this one world religion that would be accommodating Eastern and Western faiths is all part of this global management plan. It's not just world economy, world government, so forth, that most people aren't aware of. And like I said, you have the civic church that Cecil Rhodes, his close ally, W.T. Stead, wrote about over 100 years ago at that Parliament of World Religions, 1893, where he said, the focus of attention will be more and more towards the service to humanity. They kept using that, including taking care of, today would say the environment and the earth, and as New Ages would say, the sacred Mother Gaia and so forth and so on. Now, in order to do that, what you have to do, as I said, is you reduce the reverence for God that you have in typical Judeo-Christian faith services, in church, synagogue, or whatever. And then, as you diminish that, what you have is a concerted effort by their allies in the media to go along with that. Now, how would you diminish it? One way is you sort of ridicule or denigrate traditional religious concepts. So if you go onto TV now, look at CBS's show, The Greatest American Dog. Look at that show. Go online, look at their logo, and you'll see right under that Greatest American Dog, it says, In Dog We Trust. Now, anybody who knows our national motto knows that that is an obvious slur on the national motto of In God We Trust. Have you heard the American people protest this? I haven't heard it. So they're just, you keep pounding and pounding and undercutting and undermining traditional biblical beliefs, and pretty soon the people just sort of say, ho-hum, we'll just, go along with that. That's not worth protesting. And that's all psychologically part of this plan. That you shift to traditional reverence and deep respect and worship of God, which is the traditional sense of Jews and Christians, towards this concept of a civic church. They don't say, down with the church, let's destroy churches and synagogues. They don't do that. They don't say, everybody become a Hindu tomorrow. They don't do that. What they do is this pick, 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 chip, 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 chip away at the traditional concepts, shifting it over towards this social servants agency concept of a civic church. And that then becomes more easy to slide the next step into this one-world religion. So this is all managed. The one-world government by managed globalization, a one-world religion based on the synthesis of Eastern and Western faiths, the global economy, and so on. And so that's where we'll leave it, I guess, this week, and we'll pick up on that, the rest of the article, next week.
All right, we'll look forward to it. Our guest has been Dr. Dennis Cuddy. You can find his writings at newsofviews.com. That's newsofviews.com. Bye-bye, Dennis. We'll look forward to next week.
Thanks for having me.
God. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We hope that you enjoyed our conversation with Dennis. I think we always do. And certainly, you have to understand that there are two views in the world. One is, of course, that a man is created in the image and likeness of God, that Christianity is the true religion, that men should be free. The other is that, of course, men have to be managed and controlled. We need a ruling elite, man is incapable of managing his own life at all, and of course that there is a God, but it is not Christianity. We need a universal religion, because religion is important to control people. This is why we need a one world government under a ruling elite, why we need a one world religion where we can mobilize the people behind the government so they will accept whatever comes, and lastly we need the one world ruler. And that's why when you look at the logo on the front of the Foreign Affairs magazine, which is the official journal of the Council on Foreign Relations, what is their logo? You'll see it. You can get it at the local store. If you don't have access to it, you don't have access to the library, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you a copy of their logo. It's a man riding a white horse. Or perhaps it's a pale horse. Anyway, understand that they understand the spiritual significance of what's going on today. They're just hoping that the people will not, until it's far too late, until the tyranny has been established, until billions of people have been destroyed, because, of course, they're really working to fulfill the prophecies that we find laid out in Revelation 6, I believe it's, and where they talk about the riders of the pale horse. And they're really coming at us. They're coming very, very soon. In fact, I believe that the riders of the four horsemen of the apocalypse have already been released, and it's only a matter of time before we face a nuclear war in the United States, for which we have no preparation. Well, of course, they prepared for the elite. I mean, they've got their centers for them to go to, but not for you. And millions of people are going to die because they refuse to make the preparations or even to consider what we're saying to be correct. Well, we do hope many of you will want to get our material on the invisible government. We actually have a four-tape set on the secret government. And, of course, there you'll hear the interview with Professor Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor. You'll hear the interview with Norman Dodd, who investigated the great tax-exempt foundations and found that they were financing communism and socialism and humanism right here in the United States. Rockefeller, Ford, Carnegie. How could these people be pushing that? Why? Because, of course, these people are all involved to one degree or another with the occult. But you're never going to hear that elsewhere, any more than you're going to understand about our four-tape set on the secret societies. We even have a secret government special, which we recommend. We hope you'll go to our website of RadioLiberty.com and look at our free DVDs. Look at our newsletters and copy them, and certainly listen to our radio programs, which are available 9 hours a day for Radio Liberty and the rest of the 24-hour schedule with our friends. The information is there. You can listen to our feed. You can listen to us on satellite. Once you get your inexpensive satellite receiver, you can listen 24 hours a day to our program and many others that are up there on the satellite. And then, of course, we hope you'll tell others about what's going on. We hope many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family and helping us as we expand our network across America. We're starting a new station next Monday, and of course it's going to be in Spokane. We're going to be on every afternoon, drive time, greatest time in the world, a new station. And we hope that many of you will be willing to help us. If you are, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and we hope you'll be able to help us as we expand into other markets. We have well over 60 outlets every single week now. Some of them are only half an hour a week. But at least people somewhere in America are hearing the truth about the spiritual battle that is being waged today for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or seen the DVD by that title, watched our DVD on the Forbidden Secret or on the Planned Police State, get the syllabus as you go with them. Get the information out across America. It's really up to you. I can only reach so much.
High fuel prices for gasoline and diesel are taking a huge bite out of budgets for individuals and businesses. But there is something you can do. Fuel Saver Incorporated's Fuel Enhancer Formula will not only stretch each gallon of fuel further for mere pennies per treated gallon, but also cleans fuel injectors, pumps, and reduces emissions. Average improvement in fuel economy typically ranges from 8 to 20% or more, saving you 30 to 80 cents.